From NPR and WBUR, I'm Tanya Mosley.
I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. President Trump and his coronavirus task force spoke again today. They announced expanding telehealth options for Medicare recipients, widening access to tests, and sending a $1,000 check to every American. Let's start there with NPR health and development correspondent Jason Beaubien. Hi, Jason.
Hey, Robin.
And let's listen a little. The president began this press conference with an announcement about Medicare.
Today, we're also announcing a dramatic expansion of our Medicare telehealth services. Medicare patients can now visit any doctor by phone or video conference at no additional cost.
So, Jason, tell us more. Did anyone say how these measures could be implemented? Do people just start? How do you do this?
So this is, you know, this is really interesting. They are basically pulling off all of these rules and regulations that have made it very hard for people to interact with their doctors over telemedicine. You know, there's rules about HIPAA. It's to protect patient privacy. And there's a lot of things that have really been holding this back. They're saying in this moment, we need to just lift those up. Let doctors meet over the, you know, video screen, over FaceTime, over other things with patients. It gets those patients out of the hospitals. They're not sitting there, right. You know, if they just have some other problem. It is fairly dramatic what they're proposing. They're trying to make sure that people get access to healthcare in these really sort of unprecedented times.
Right. And what do they say about tests?
So the testing issue, I mean, this continues to be a huge issue. The U.S. Public Health Service said that they're rolling out tests. They said they actually have them on pallets. They said they did a test of one of the drive-through units that they're trying to send out. You know, there's the idea that these will be set up in Walmart parking lots. There's been a great demand for tests, and this is going to be part of the solution. The interesting thing is that they are just got them on pallets and they're going to be rolling them out. You know, we are way into this pandemic globally, and there's been a lot of criticism of how slow the United States has been at getting the testing system up. They also said they're going to allow states to approve other tests that might be being developed by commercial enterprises, which is a little bit odd because, you know, the FDA approves these things because the FDA knows how to do that. Every state does not know how to approve a very sophisticated test to detect the coronavirus. But now they're saying states can go ahead and do that. Potentially that could free up more companies to be selling some tests, but it's kind of hard to know. At the same time, they did say they are seeing more people getting tested, finally getting some more, a significant jump, and they expect that to continue as this week progresses and as more of these tests get online.
And just in the half minute we have, we know the president said he wouldn't or didn't say he would implement stringent measures as far as keeping people in their homes. But what was said about what's being called social distancing, physical distancing?
He basically said, enjoy your living room. He is really hitting this hard. He is telling people, stay home.
Yeah.
If you do not need to be going out, he made this absolutely clear, stay home. Work from home, get your kids to stay home, and get young people who might be wanting to go out to bars and whatnot to take this moment, do it for the good of everyone else, and stay home if you can.
Quite a different tone from the president both yesterday and today. NPR Health and Development correspondent.
It was.
Jason Beaubien, thank you as always.
You're welcome.
The streets of Spain are beginning to look a lot like parts of the rest of the world. Streets are empty, stores are closed, and people are locking themselves indoors. And the number of coronavirus infections rose dramatically today to more than 11,000, and the death toll has risen to more than 450. The BBC's Damian Grammaticus joins us from Madrid. And Damian, tell us more about the situation there, and where exactly are you?
Well, I am right in the heart of Madrid. I'm looking down at the minute from a roof terrace across the main train station. You may hear that's the sound of an ambulance just going round this big roundabout in front of me. And this is really the heart of Madrid's sort of transport sort of hub. So you've got this giant train station in front, avenues leading into the city centre around me, and I mean, there are, what, a handful of buses travelling down the road. There are perhaps a dozen or so cars coming down this huge avenue. But that is it. Otherwise, I can see just down here to my right, there's a pharmacy that's open, but that is the only shop that's open there. The train station itself is the commuter hub for Madrid, and it is pretty much deserted.
Is there a total lockdown in place there?
Well, it's not total. There is basically everyone has been told to stay at home, stay indoors, unless, and there's very limited reasons you can be outside. One is to go to work. So some people aren't going to workplaces as long as they are sort of safe there. Otherwise, you can only go out individually, one member of a household at a time, to buy food. You are allowed out to take a dog for a walk, say, but people are meant to be, you know, doing that, using that in very limited circumstances, and otherwise only for emergencies.
Very quickly, I mentioned the number of those sickened. Can you tell us if Spain's healthcare system can actually cope with this right now?
Well, we have spent the last couple of days going to different hospitals, talking to medics, and you hear the same story in every one, which is that, yes, it can cope at the minute, but it is really stretched. And it's stretched because just the number of people now presenting themselves in the emergency rooms with symptoms, people who are anxious, people who have chest breathing problems. So the beds are filling up very fast. They have emptied anyone else from the hospitals they can to free up space. So the space in the beds is not so much the issue. What the real issue at the minute is the two things, is the medical equipment available, mm-hmm. safety equipment, gloves, masks. Doctors say, tell us everywhere we've learned that they are running out of those or running low on those. And the sort of the pressure on the doctors, because they have to get suited up and protected. That takes time. It's difficult. They have to do it any time they're in contact with the patients. They're working long hours. So they're worried about how sustainable this all is.
The same challenges in the rest of the world as well. That's the BBC's Damian Grammaticus speaking with us from Madrid. Damian, thank you so much for this update.
Thank you.
And now to Ohio, which called off today's presidential primary at the last minute, pushing off voting for months. Other states voting today, Illinois, Arizona, and Florida, will go on with their elections as planned. Several states set to vote later in the primaries have also postponed elections so far. Those include Georgia, Louisiana, Kentucky, and Maryland. Joe Ingles is a reporter with Ohio Public Radio and Television, joins us now. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
So start with what we know. No elections today. What's the plan?
Well, Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose has suggested that those who want to vote and who wanted to vote today can get absentee ballots and vote by mail. And the deadline for that voting would be pushed off until June 2nd. That would allow the registered voters who want to vote to get that done. But the Ohio legislature will likely have to weigh in on this. House and Senate members have been working remotely, but could be called in soon to deal with these coronavirus issues, this and some other things. And, of course, there are court challenges. So, in short, we'll have to see how this shakes out.
Well, why not just say everybody vote absentee and get it done sooner so they're not voting in June, which is just a month before what's supposed to be the Democratic convention? It may not be. But why not just tell everybody vote absentee?
And that may very well happen, Robin. We don't know exactly. You know, the legislature's going to have to weigh in on this. The legislature may say that's what has to happen. We don't particularly know all the details yet, but Secretary of State LaRose is saying people who wanted to vote today, who waited to vote till today, they should have the option to vote. And the legislature has, by and large, you know, been very receptive to that in the past.
Well, so take us to the courts, because it got really confusing. State officials said they didn't have the legal authority to just delay or call it off, so they sought a court order through private plaintiffs. But then the judge said no. So how did it get shut down?
Well, okay, yesterday afternoon, Governor DeWine, Secretary of State LaRose announced, hey, the in-person voting is canceled, and we're going to, try to get mail-in ballots with the June 2nd date. And they filed a court brief on behalf of some older patients who they said would be put at risk if they went to the polls. Then last evening, Franklin County Court said, hey, it can't comply with that order because it doesn't have the authority. So that sent the situation into a tailspin. Mm. And so the judge said no, and they had to go from there. Later in the evening, the governor came back and said the state health director, Amy Acton, had issued a public order that closed the polls today. Mm. And it said, and the order said it was a public health emergency to do that. Yeah. So then it went to the Supreme Court, Ohio Supreme Court, to weigh in, and overnight, four of the seven Ohio Supreme Court justices denied the legal challenge earlier in the day that, you know, said, hey, that it could be kept open. And the three justices that abstained from that vote were Justice DeWine's son and two other justices that are on the ballot. So that's where it was left. And then today, of course, the polls are not open.
Okay. So right now, people in your state have till June, and it may change. It may be all absentee ballot. We're going to follow it with you, Joe Ingles, again, with Ohio Public Radio and Television. You could not make this up, a pandemic and a presidential election.
Right.
Joe, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This message comes from Here and Now sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. That's why you need Indeed.com. Post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates using an intuitive online dashboard. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free at Indeed.com/here now. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply. Offer valid through March 31st, 2020.
31-year-old stand-up comic Jesse Appel is making tea in his family home in Newton, Massachusetts.
I got like some flower tea. I thought I was going to be here for 5 days, but I'm almost here 2 months now, so I'm running
out of tea. It's tea he brought from China, where he's something of a celebrity. Jesse is a Jewish-American, Chinese-speaking stand-up comic. He went to China 8 years ago as a Fulbright scholar to study the language and the country's history of stand-up comics, and he became one.
I'm super happy to see so many people here and all sorts of people here. The thing is, when I come back to America, nobody believes I'm a Chinese comedian.
Jesse came home to the U.S. for the holidays, then couldn't go back because of the COVID-19 outbreak. So he did this fundraiser showing heartbreaking footage of Wuhan doctors and victims, but also hilarious videos from China's internet of people in quarantine. They were using sock puppets or making believe they were training for the Olympics, pushing teapots across kitchen floors as if they were curling stones. We did a story on Jesse's fundraiser. We'll post the tapes of the show again at hereandnow.org. Last week, he posted them on Chinese social media. You woke up to what?
I think the first night it got something like 20, 30 million hits. The best estimate I have now is somewhere north of 350 million views.
So you're getting messages too. What are people saying to you when they're messaging you?
Oh my God, it's unbelievable. Just the basic, like whenever you post a new video now, like I've got 30 seconds or 5 minutes worth of happiness and that's really valuable. And that makes me feel so good as a comedian. You know, people have been commenting on, you know, that they're very glad that a positive image of China is being shared outside of the country because everybody's suffering through this thing. And then to be going on to the Western media and seeing like negative report after negative report is upsetting to them. And to have, you know, something positive come out of it where the Chinese people are able to show that they're facing down the problem with a good sense of humor, I think that reached people.
That's wild. And I know you've heard from friends, and we're going to call one. Now, who are we calling?
So we're calling my friend Storm Xu. So this guy is a Chinese guy born in Shanghai, raised in Shanghai, but he does both Chinese and English stand-up. When I got to China in 2012 and started doing stand-up, there were like 8 people in the whole country that knew what stand-up was and was doing stand-up, and he was one of them. He's also, you know, performed at Edinburgh Fringe Festival. He was in Melbourne. He's been hustling real hard for a long time.
But since January, Storm's been alone at home in his apartment.
Hello?
Hey, Storm, how you doing? It's Jesse.
Hey, Jesse, what's up, man?
I'm doing good. I'm here with Robin, who's a reporter for...
Jesse introduces us. Now, we know we can ask Storm sensitive questions about the handling of this illness. This is, after all, China. And we know that over 80,000 people have been sickened. Over 3,000 people have died from COVID-19. So to break the ice, I asked, was Storm also in air quotes training for something like the Chinese people we'd seen?
Yeah, I'm trying to be the world's fattest guy.
The world's fattest guy.
Yeah, I'm by eating a lot.
But so you're not in quarantine, are you?
Well, we just do quarantine voluntarily, you know. Voluntarily, 40 days plus.
Wow, that's a long time.
I did go out a couple of times to buy stuff.
Storm, I got to ask you, I mean, you're a stand-up comic. Are you like, how are you doing what you do?
To be honest, my talent all went away. I haven't been on stage for a long time. Yeah, all my talents went to waste. I don't remember some of my jokes right now, and I don't have the rhythm or cadence anymore.
Yeah.
Storm, I was wondering, Jesse did these fundraising shows here. They've gone mega viral in China. Have you seen it, by the way? Have you seen it?
Yeah, they have. They have. Yeah, it's true.
And by the way, what'd you think of that? I thought it was such a beautiful show. It was a mix of, you know, his feelings for the people of China, but also those hilarious videos.
Actually, the comedy circle here, right, were rooting for him, for Jesse. I mean, from the beginning, we're trying to get more audience for him. We think that's a profound thing to do, to make people believe in humanity more.
To make people believe in humanity more.
That's a beautiful thing. The American guy who does stand-up comedy in China, something we all should be proud of, I think, because he's one of us, right? Mm-hmm. If he does something good, that means we do something good collectively.
Oh, that's very cool. He does something good, you do something good collectively. Does it make you laugh the way it made us laugh?
Yeah, it's really funny. I don't know, man, because people start to share your video. It's beyond stand-up. For them, it's beyond stand-up.
It's beyond stand-up.
Yeah, you connect people. The video connects people. They think, wow, okay, there are people in U.S. also care about Wuhan and feel for us. It connects.
Oh,
that's what I'm trying to get you.
Yeah, well, and you have. What's it like? I mean, when you look out the window, what's it like there?
To be honest, the first week, it was rough. Felt like a little bit hopeless. But over time, it's just normal now. I went to buy some grocery yesterday, and I was more comfortable home than outside, you know what I'm saying? Stuck inside for too long, now it's like comfortable.
You're more comfortable inside than outside.
Yeah, it's more comfortable inside than outside. There's a term used in Japanese to describe men who stay in their apartment.
The, like Kikihimori or something like that. The subculture of Japanese people that just have like stayed at home for like 4 years and like never leave and their parents just bring them food.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like such a profound time, Storm. But first of all, congratulations, because we know in China, the number of cases is going down. In fact, we're reading of, you know, new cases. Many of them came to China from Italy, one from the United States. People who now go to China have to be in quarantine before they can go out in China. They have to stay in a hotel, I guess.
Such an irony, isn't it? Like, 2 months ago, my Western friends, some of them went back to U.S. I don't want to get virus, right? But now they are coming back to China to avoid the virus, which is, I don't know, man.
I it sounds like humor actually may be more important than ever in China.
Yes or no. But more importantly, how you handle, which Jesse did, but if you did it wrong, I mean, margin of the error is like very small. To be honest, I mean, I'm a stand-up comedian myself, but I still don't find any funny out of the coronavirus so far. I don't know if I can make it funny. Because some jokes I heard on internet are really offensive to me. I mean, I'm a comedian. I'm supposed to be the last one who gets offended, right? But, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Storm, do you have any idea when the open mics are going to start again?
Oh, no matter it's comedy or music, I don't see anytime soon. I see it quite dangerous.
Yeah. I was worried about this because, like, even if they allowed it to be back on, it might be months before people psychologically get used to being in groups together. You said you got used to being alone at home very quickly. Like, it just doesn't sound like fun.
No, that's true. Like, even for comedians ourselves, I don't know how to justify this. If it's, like, allowed to be open, but how I can convince myself, convince people around me that going back to the theater, going back on the stage. Yeah, everybody's after a long time quarantine, stay at home. Everyone's a little bit, the panic is understandable.
Hey, one last question, Storm. You must be so proud of the medical establishment there.
Oh, it's, I don't want to use the word proud, man. It's like, I don't have any adjective for me to use at the moment. It's just selfish to let other people jeopardize their lives for you. And so the word I'm trying to use is, it's painful. It's painful to watch medical staff just fight at the front line and suffer. It's painful. They're suffering. That's what they are. It's painful for me to watch. It's painful for anyone.
It was fascinating to see someone from China, where the collective is prized above the individual, unwilling to even use the word pride because it might reflect some undeserved glory back on him. As for Jesse, it was shocking for him to see how somber his friend was. After our call, Jesse said this was his worst fear, that the Chinese would be wounded beyond the obvious physical effects of COVID-19. But before we hung up, we had a glimpse of the storm Jesse knew when Storm brought up Americans' need to get toilet paper.
Yeah, man. Get as much as toilet paper as you can, man. So,
yeah.
He
said get as much toilet paper.
Right.
Yeah. And then, you know.
I don't know. Dude, I don't get the idea around just stocking up toilet paper. Why toilet paper?
Well, I don't know. Have you ever been camping? Wait till you run out of toilet paper.
Yeah, but you can still wash your, like,
Okay.
Anyway.
Thanks a lot, guys.
See you soon, hopefully.
Good to talk to you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Storm Chu, in his third month of self-quarantine in his small apartment in China, and his friend Jesse Appel, the American stand-up comic in China who's stuck in the U.S. because of the virus. We'll link you to Jesse's videos that have gone mega viral in China and, as we just heard, brought so much comfort there at hereandnow.org. And for weeks, economists have been urging the government to act now to get money into people's pockets to ease the economic shock from the coronavirus. And as we've said today, Secretary of State Steven Mnuchin said Republicans are ready to rally behind a larger House bill that would inject $850 billion into the economy. Let's bring in Robin Farzad, host of Public Radio's Full Disclosure. Hi, Robin.
How are you?
I'm good. And we're learning details of the stimulus package. And the big news, of course, today, Secretary Mnuchin said part of it will be the government sending checks right to people, cold hard cash. Let's listen.
We're looking at sending checks to Americans immediately. And what we've heard from hardworking Americans, many companies have now shut down, whether it's bars or restaurants. Americans need cash now, and the president wants to get cash now. And I mean now, in the next 2 weeks.
So, Robin Farzad, we're also hearing from economists on this program that this will do too little. You know, it's just a gesture, but a gesture maybe many Americans will appreciate.
Yeah, and that's a huge headline. At the very least, you're going to get a headline of a $850 billion economic stimulus package, and there's certainly more on the table. Everything else in the world right now is in flux, but we do know that this proposal's expected to include delaying tax deadlines. You have forbearance for student loan interest payments. On top of everything we saw Congress include last week with expanded sick leave and other financial aid for virus testing. So let's see what comes out of this express lawmaking, if you will.
And as to those checks, Derek Thompson from The Atlantic told us yesterday, reminded us that George W. Bush did something similar after 2008, checks right out to people after the housing collapse. But what besides checks is in this package, do we know?
Well, yeah, you have... the White House has been pushing on this whole payroll tax cut thing for a while, but there are interesting things if you have small businesses that are terrified about their cash flow prospects, like a restaurant that has not had table service, is maybe as a skeletal staff, can offer a curbside pickup or delivery. There's this discussion of postponing the due date for quarterly tax payments. So that at least provides some relief in the short term that lets restaurants husband cash flow. You saw unanimity with the $1,000 check idea that people such as Tom Cotton and Mitt Romney, it would have been unthinkable for stalwarts of the GOP to advocate getting behind what would otherwise be called a handout.
Yeah, Andrew Yang is kind of smiling. $50 billion of the $850 billion would go to bailing out the airline industry. A lot of people are saying, wait a second, they rode the bull market to record profits. Why do they get bailout and not, let's say, a small gym?
Yeah, it's justified anger. I mean, these are supermerged airlines that have, you know, banked record profits over 8 years, squeezing passengers. They hiked fares, nickel and dimed us. They rode surcharges to these outsized profits and then returned that money to shareholders if you look at buybacks and dividends. So there's this new, you know, Susan of what we heard in 2009, private profit, socialized risk. But the airlines know that they are systemically important. I mean, they are the system. And if they go under, if they just pull back, that's a bigger price tag for the government and for the system to have to handle than maybe preemptively offering them aid.
But Robin Farzad, you know, how do you think, I mean, we're not going to talk directly to the markets because, you know, we they're all over the place. But will this satisfy investors? We just have a few seconds, or calm them.
I just think it buys time. I think until there's something approximating an all clear, it's easy to go out again. It's easy to dine. You can see people. You have an economy in kind of unprecedented freeze. And this is only stimulating at the margins.
Well, I still say order out, buy gift certificates. Robin Farzad, host of Public Radio's Full Disclosure. Thank you.
Thank you, Robin.
And we want to take a quick trip around the country now to see how COVID-19 is impacting businesses, starting in Ardmore, Pennsylvania, where Carrie Coes is owner of Pucci Manuli Toy Store and Gift Shop. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm good. How are you? Because your store is closed to in-person customers. You're following the recommendation from your governor to close.
We are, yes. On Thursday, we got the notification that we should strongly recommend closing our doors. So that's what we did.
They wanted you to close non-essential retail. We think toys are essential, but you're adapting. You're working with people over FaceTime, Skype, video conferencing. How's it going?
We are. So far, so good. We're trying to make lemonade here, trying to put our creative hats on and come up with different ways to serve our customers in this sort of uncharted territory that we find ourselves in.
How do you let them know? I mean, you probably already, you know, already had customers, but have you alerted people who used to come in to go, you know, to Skype?
We have, yes. We send emails out. We are on social media. We are doing our best to notify people in those ways. And thankfully, we've got a little bit of a following, so they're aware of it, and they are actually spreading the word for us as well, which is great. So, so far, so good.
Well, you have five people on your staff part-time. Now, some are working with reduced hours. Others are staying home, not getting paid. Boy, that's got to be a tough decision. I'm assuming you know all of them well.
I do know them all very well, and it is incredibly difficult. As a small business, you know, we don't have huge cash reserves in the bank, so to speak. We work on thin margins, and we do our best day to day. And we just got word that the state of Pennsylvania has come up with a emergency unemployment package, which I'm happy to see.
Great.
I need to do some more research on that, but yeah, it's devastating. I know these people well, and it's heartbreaking.
Well, of course, I'm sure they wish also that the store stay open, you know, so that it can be there when they come back and they're maybe, you know, sacrificing for that. But you're already competing with Amazon, I'm sure. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to go there right now. Why should they go to you or a local store instead?
Oh, gosh, you bring up that four-letter word, Amazon, figuratively anyway. People tell us all the time we have quite a different and unique experience, unlike most retail out there. And we wanted to try to capture that virtually. Our shop-to-shop program that we have on PucciMinulli.com, which is this FaceTime shopping program that we are now sort of we've brought to the forefront and are promoting. We have a connection to the community like no one else does, and no other large corporation does. Yeah. We know these customers. We know their kids. We know their grandkids. We see them on a regular basis, and we're part of the community.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone else can say that. And I think also in a increasingly digital economy and global economy, people are craving human connection to one another.
Yeah.
Something you don't get when you buy online. You don't have that human interaction with one another. So
yeah.
While it's FaceTime is sort of it's digital, you at least get to see the person on the other end of
right.
the screen, and you get to see their smile.
Well, Carrie Coase, owner of PucciMinulli Toy Store and Gift Shop in Ardmore, Pennsylvania, we would also add Easter's coming, bunny rabbits
yes.
and things, stuffed animals and stuff.
Lots.
We'll link you up at hereandnow.org. Carrie, best of luck to you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm.
Like so many industries, the hotel business is also suffering because of COVID-19. In Seattle, hotel business has dropped nearly 80%, at least in the last few days. And as hotels try to accommodate travelers' changes in plans, hotel workers are worried about what's next as some see their hours cut. For more, we're joined by Jeremy Sharp. He's a front desk agent at Edgewater Hotel, located along the Puget Sound. Welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you.
And Jeremy, this is certainly an uncertain time, and especially for people like yourself in the service industry. How are you holding up?
Pretty well, but there's a lot of uncertainty in the hotel because of guest cancellations and downturns in the cruise ship business.
Yeah. You work at the front desk, as I said. Edgewater is a very popular hotel for tourists because it's right in the heart of everything in Seattle. And so many of the guests, I would imagine, come to you for information. You're their number one source. During your time when you have been working, how have you been supporting those guests?
We've been updating them on what around us is closed. At the front desk, we also have had hand sanitizer and increased cleaning of the lobby area.
Yeah, it's just such a difficult position for you to be in. Have your hours been cut?
I've lost some hours, and I expect more extreme cuts in the coming weeks. In fact, I was supposed to work today, but got a call last night that my shift was canceled. With these cuts, I won't be able to pay my rent or my other bills. My expenses don't stop, even if my income does. So I myself have begun the next steps and kind of making plans for should more hours be cut. I'm looking into unemployment and other resources that are out there and available.
Yeah. So you want to be able to work, or you want the Edgewater Hotel to be able to offer some sort of support. What would you like?
My union has asked hotel management to expand sick time and guarantee continued health care coverage, but they have so far refused.
Okay. Tell me what your job means to you.
I would say it's how I support myself, but it's also I really love interacting with the public, which at this time is very difficult. But I moved here 4 years ago because of the people here in Seattle. They're really resilient, and they really can stand up and take whatever challenge comes to them, and that truly drew me to the city. And especially now, even through this, I plan on standing with them.
That's Jeremy Sharp. He's a front desk agent at the Edgewater Hotel. Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And we reached out to Edgewater Hotels for comment. They have declined to speak at the moment.
Well, let's turn now to Khalil Madawakil, co-founder of Kind Peoples, a cannabis dispensary with several locations in Santa Cruz, California, Santa Cruz County, one of several in Northern California that's currently under a shelter-in-place order. Khalil, we know you're operating under new restrictions today.
We are indeed. We're open for business, but we are only allowed to serve our customer base outdoors, so we're doing so at the front door of our facility.
Well, there's somebody ringing right now. But just let's cut to it, because people might be thinking, wait a minute, cannabis dispensary, why is that important at this time? Why is it?
Absolutely. That's understandable. You know, we are deemed as an essential service by the County of Santa Cruz, and I believe that our community really values and understands the need for cannabis in a time of crisis, and that people can, you know, find alternatives to pharmaceuticals and alcohol or other drugs that they may turn to while they're cooped up in their homes and, you know, under a lot of pressure and anxiety.
And you say that many of them may be stockpiling for that reason?
Absolutely, yeah. Yesterday was an absolute mad dash at the dispensaries here in town, and we served about 1,200 customers.
Yeah. Well, and some of your workers aren't getting paid. You're having the same problems others have. How are you? Is there anything you can do for them?
Absolutely. No, you know, it's a really difficult situation. We're not aware of any relief programs other than to pay out accrued sick time or paid time off. But we do feel blessed that we're allowed to continue our operations and payroll for those that do want to work. But we do want to support our employees to the best that we can, and we're hoping that our state and county come forth and give us some options.
Yeah, and what about supply chain?
Supply chain, that's the big question. You know, at the moment, we're stable, but we are getting calls from vendors that are shutting down their operations. You know, a lot of our product comes from the San Francisco Bay Area. They also have a shelter in place in effect. So really only time will tell for how long we can continue to stock our shelves.
And just, you know, shelter in place, what's the mood there?
Well, it's only been 11 hours since midnight last night, and I was working the counters this morning, actually working directly with customers, and people are really grateful that a business like Kind People's does still have their doors open. But I think everyone right now is freaking out a bit and trying to figure out what their next move is, and, you know, hopefully just going home and turning on Netflix and relaxing and staying healthy.
Yeah, we had a shelter in place in Boston after the bombing. It is quite a chilling time. Khalil Madawakil, co-founder of Kind People's, the cannabis business in Santa Cruz. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Robin.
And we're following the response to the coronavirus in the United States and around the world. And in Latin America, Brazil has the most cases on the continent, with more than 200 confirmed infections. And as the country takes an enormous economic hit from this worldwide shutdown, there are calls for President Bolsonaro there to be impeached. NPR's Philip Rees has been monitoring events across Latin America from his base in Rio de Janeiro and joins me now. And Phil, this virus hasn't hit Latin America as hard as some of the other places we've been talking about during the show, Europe and Asia. But we've heard about some high-profile cases in Brazil, the president's communications secretary, for instance, who was actually with Bolsonaro a week and a half ago, meeting with President Trump at Mar-a-Lago. What more can you tell us?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Bolsonaro's communications secretary was on that trip. He posed with President Trump for a picture, and it was confirmed soon after that he had tested positive. We've since found out that quite a few more Brazilians on that delegation that visited Florida have also contracted the virus. 14 in total, according to one of Brazil's top news outlets, Folha. Hmm. Now, 10 of these have separately confirmed this. We haven't confirmed the figure 14, but 10 have confirmed. We don't know how many of them would have had contact with Trump, but that's a large number. Now, after that dinner with Trump at Mar-a-Lago, Trump was tested, as you'll probably remember, and he reported a negative result. Bolsonaro did the test. He also reported negative. Bolsonaro was supposed to remain in isolation after his test and to wait for several other tests to be carried out just to be sure that he's clear. But on Sunday, he broke out of isolation. He came out of the presidential palace to join a big demonstration of his far-right supporters who'd taken to the streets, encouraged by him, to protest against Brazil's Congress and judiciary. So Bolsonaro ignored all his own government's instructions about social and physical distancing. He shook hands with people. He posed for selfies. He breathed on people. They breathed on him. A reporter the Brazilian paper Estadão was there and actually counted the number of times Bolsonaro came into direct contact with people, and the number turned out to be 272. So he's being described here as a super spreader.
Yeah, he's So he's getting a lot of heat for this, for these actions. There are these calls for his impeachment.
He's getting a lot of heat, even from some of his own supporters on the far right. There's another reason for this. You know, he's announced plans today to spend $30 billion on vulnerable groups, maintaining jobs and so on. That number's likely to be far, far less than Brazil actually needs in the end. But, it, you know, he sounds like he's taking it seriously at last. Yet at the same time, he said in an interview that he thinks that Brazilians are being hysterical and alarmist. He's repeatedly played down this virus, and that's causing a lot of anger. Some of his political opponents are beginning to mutter the word impeachment, though I think we're a long way from that point.
I want to ask you about some of the other places. Let's talk a little bit about Venezuela. For years, you know, we've been hearing about the collapse of medical care there, among other things. What, if anything, is the President Maduro doing to mitigate an outbreak there?
Well, he has placed the entire country under quarantine, although this is very hard to enforce. Venezuela now has more than 30 cases. Its health system has already collapsed. Many medical professionals have left the country. There's a desperate shortage of medicine, equipment, electricity, clean water, not to mention, you know, hand sanitizer and soap. Maduro's been talking about getting some supplies from Cuba and test kits from China, although whether these actually materialize remains to be seen. And to make matters even worse for him, the price of oil's collapsed. You know, he's been limping along, finding ways That's around right. U.S. oil sanctions, you know, selling crude at very discounted prices. Now it's going to be extremely difficult to see how he can carry on doing that.
Yeah, we've been hearing borders closing around the world. What about the rest of the continent? What measures are other countries taking?
Well, here in Brazil, we've just heard that the country's confirmed its first coronavirus death. It's finally beginning to wake up to the gravity of the situation here.
Yeah.
I went to Copacabana Beach here in Rio on Sunday, and it was full of people sunbathing and cavorting in the sand. Things have now changed. Firemen are going around the beaches here with bullhorns, appealing to people to go home. Tourist attractions, including Sugarloaf Mountain and the Statue of Christ the Redeemer, are shut. So are schools and universities. And it's a pretty similar situation also in Brazil's bigger city, Sao Paulo. Museums, galleries, sports venues, clubs, all shut down. The general message is people should stay inside. Elsewhere in the region, I mean, we're seeing very similar things. The picture's just of a general shutdown. Argentina, which has more than 60 cases and at least two deaths so far, has shut its borders to arriving foreigners. It's closed schools. It's banned large events. Colombia's closing its frontiers. Chile will follow suit tomorrow. Ecuador and Paraguay have nighttime curfews. So we're seeing a general shutdown. It doesn't, by the way, only appear to apply to the general public, also to prisons. We've seen people breaking out of prisons here.
Yes, absolutely.
Because they're worried about the fact that they're losing their day release programs.
So much to talk about. Thank you so much. That's NPR's Philip Reeves in Rio de Janeiro. Thank you.
And Here Now is a production of NPR and WBUR in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Robin Young.
I'm Tanya Mosley. This is Here Now.